Good evening, Boston. Welcome to BNN News. I'm Faith Hamafadon. Thanks for tuning in. On Sunday, the next generation of artists showed their artistic creations at the Margarita Muniz Academy Student Art Exhibition.
In a vibrant display of talent and innovation, the Margarita Muniz Academy Art Exhibition showcased the skills and boundless creativity of Boston's emerging artists at the Museum of Fine Arts.
These student art projects are really important because they are their forms of expression, and most of our students have not had any kind of art classes or formal training. And so at first it may feel a little intimidating, but over time they really get to figure out their own individual expressions and tell a story through their art making.
Visitors entered a world of color and imagination, where each piece told a unique story reflecting diverse perspectives and mediums of these young artists.
So for the Beast painting, I got that inspiration just from looking at different like artworks and then putting it into one. So then I started off by making it 3D. I also did paper mache on the bees and then painted them. I also did a lot of like shading, a lot of detailing to the bees. So yeah, that was like a lot about me. I get like very like into detail with my art, and I think really deeply into my art before doing it.
To eventually paint and demonstrate my ideas on a canvas, I feel like it's liberating. I feel like I can eventually show it to the world, show my expressions, and eventually share my view of the world with other people. I'm a very quiet and outgoing kid sometimes, but I don't really express that much, so art is my way of saying out loud how I feel.
Since 2016, Margarita Muniz Academy has partnered with the Museum of Fine Arts for this annual exhibition of student work. The school says that art is a critical vehicle to learning, communication, and connections to the community. Over 90% of the Academy's student population is Latino, with many students still learning the English language. Saturday's art exhibition is a testament to art being a universal language.
Art is important for any child, for every student, but it's particularly important for our students because so many of them are not native English speakers. Their first language is Spanish, and they're just learning English. And yet all students, especially teenagers, need to be able to express themselves, and art is a perfect avenue for them to do that. They express what they feel, what they're thinking about, and then as people see it, and they get a positive response to what they've drawn, it enhances their self-image and validates what they're thinking and what they're feeling.
This exhibition is a wonderful opportunity for our students to show things that they feel about themselves, about their community, emotions that they sometimes suppress to Boston, to their parents, to their teachers. And having this space in the museum, I think, gives them a sense of pride and lets them know that their feelings, the things that they feel inside of them, are something that is worth showing other people, and this is an outlet for them to express all of that through art, through painting.
Exhibition artists say sitting down with paints and a brush was a satisfying and very personal experience. These students are able to share some of their hopes, dreams, and fears through their artwork, available for all to see at Boston's Museum of Fine Arts.
On Tuesday, advocates spotlighted the importance of supporting individuals with autism and how we can increase understanding and equality.
Cellist and self-advocate Adam Mandela Walden sets the tone for the 19th annual Autism Advocacy Day at the State House. Advocates for Autism of Massachusetts, AFAM, hosted the event to bring attention to the needs of those who live with Autism Spectrum Disorder, or ASD.
First and foremost, it's about the individual, and they are individuals who are stuck at home right now, who do not have access to their services. They are regressing. They are experiencing mental health issues. They are not getting the services that they need to thrive. As well, there are individuals who are only getting a set of the services that they need to support. They're getting less than the services they need. And even individuals who are getting services right now, a lot of the organizations are experiencing such vacancy rates that they can't do their best job.
Organizers recognize legislators working to pass bills to help the ASD community across healthcare and education. AFAM says the challenges for ASD families and care providers are many, and more state funding is needed.
For families to not receive services because the insurance company won't cover it, or because they can't get access to the state program, which might be the only way that they can get the services, for those families, it is critical because it affects the quality of life for all of the members, for the person who has autism and for the family members who are supporting that person. So it is critical that they have the services available to them, that there is a means to cover those services that don't financially devastate the family. So it is important that we have a budget in the state that supports these families.
It can be exhausting to take care of a person with autism who has 24/7 needs. You know, the spectrum is very wide, and there are many people who are more independent. But we know that at least 27% of the spectrum needs 24/7 care. So these families are really struggling to provide that year after year now. They may have some programming, but then they may not have transportation to that programming. So it's really making it impossible for families to work and to really support these individuals.
Mass State Police is changing how they interact with autistic drivers by implementing the Blue Envelope program. Drivers can request a blue envelope to attach to their car visor, which has their license, registration, and instructions for the police on the driver's diagnosis and triggers in the event of a car stop.
As a trooper, we stop a lot of cars. We interact with a lot of different people with different abilities and skills. And this just starts the conversation. When somebody is nervous and apprehensive, it reflects back on us. And this hopefully puts them at ease, puts us at ease, and enables us to just communicate better. There are simple instructions. All troopers and all officers in the state receive training on autism awareness and recognition. And this just primes them during that interaction to be prepared to treat people with understanding and respect.
The National Institute of Health estimates that 2.4% of adults 18 years and older in Massachusetts live with ASD. Yet some advocates point to the complication of not having a diagnosis.
Unfortunately, many families don't get the determination for the services, and that is a really hard moment, because at that time, then you have a youth who is 22 years old, and for the rest of their life, they're going to need care, and they're going to need services that no one is providing, and it needs to be privately funded by the family. So that is a really difficult moment for parents who decide that they have to either quit jobs, or someday they're going to get older and not be able to take care of their family.
AFAM says they'll continue to work so the autistic community may live fully and enjoy the same opportunities as the rest of the Commonwealth.
As Mayor Michelle Wu gears up to announce the city's plans for 2025, residents are demanding a say in how Boston spends its budget.
$40 million for PV, 1% for you and me.
This is the chant of members from Better Budget Alliance in downtown Boston, and they mean business. Dozens of members rallied at Boston City Hall last Wednesday, demanding that Mayor Wu dedicate 1% of the city's budget to participatory budgeting.
It's really important that the community has direct deciding power over the dollars in the budget, you know, being able to think about the problems and issues that they're having and facing in their communities and creating true and real solutions. So it all starts with an adequate budget. Do we have the real funding to make these happen, to empower our residents to participate?
Better Budget Alliance delivered over 500 postcards from Boston residents. They knocked on City Hall doors and made their case for the full allocation of money outside the mayor's office. That 1% translates to $40 million from the city's $4 billion budget.
Having the community decide over 1% of the budget, it gives us real people, you know, the normal person, every Bostonian, control over deciding what our needs are. It will make us more civically engaged. We will feel like we belong and that our needs are being met because we're deciding what needs to be funded through 1% of the budget.
We want 1% of the city's operating budget to be decided through participatory budgeting. The operating budget is primarily made up of tax dollars from property taxes that people are paying either as homeowners or as renters, they're paying through their rents. this money should be directly decided by people, because people in our neighborhoods know what they need. And it's good policy to have folks in our neighborhoods deciding it. There's no way that one mayor or even a team of her staff can be in touch with the needs that are constantly changing in every neighborhood.
City Councilor Tanya Fernandez Anderson says the $40 million belongs to the people and offered her support. Several ralliers expressed how lack of funding for predominantly Black neighborhoods has resulted in many projects falling through the cracks.
Ultimately, it's the mayor's decision to allocate funds, but she is overseeing many, many departments with recommendations and already things in planning. So I think it's a combination of understanding the needs through the departments, but also understanding the needs through the experts in the community. The community knows what they need. The community is close to the pain, and so the community should be part of the decision making.
We need participatory budgeting, because we need to change the issues with racial, systemic racism. We need to uplift Black and brown folks in our neighborhoods who need access to good jobs, need access to better housing. Would love to share their voice, because community are the ones who should be shaping their own community. And they have a lot to say, and they need to be in the room.
Participatory budgeting became a reality after a successful vote on the ballot in 2021. On Thursday, Mayor Wu will unveil her budget for fiscal year 2025. And Better Budget Alliance organizers hope that she's listening.
To further our story, we were thrilled to have Kendra Patterson, a steering committee member of the Better Budget Alliance, join us in studio to discuss the participatory budget issue and how the organization is helping put the power back into the hands of the people. Kendra, I'd love to get started. Last Wednesday, we saw members of Better Budget Alliance in Boston. They rallied at City Hall. We saw the delivering of hundreds of postcards to the mayor. What was it like to be part of that rally? And what have been some of the results?
Yes, so over the last month, our coalition, the Better Budget Alliance, has been in the community having conversations and informing residents of the current process for participatory budgeting. We're asking for the mayor to give $40 million for true investments and, you know, leveraging our community's experiences and identifying issues and solutions in participatory budgeting processes. So last Wednesday, we convened with over 500 pledge cards, as well as emails to the mayor, to share our story as to why it's important to have True Invested of $40 million, which is only 1% of the over operating budget, to be allocated to participatory budgeting. Our groups are intergenerational, multiracial, and we all showed up to make sure that our voices were heard.
Excellent. And you said you're asking for the $40 million, the 1%. What is the current allotment now?
Yes. So right now, last year, the mayor allocated $2 million, bringing the overall allocation to $4 million for the process. So that includes funding the Office of Participatory Budgeting, as well as collecting the ideas for implementation. And so that's the current budget. We're asking the mayor to give a little bit more, $40 million. That's not a little bit more, but why we're making that specific ask, because in comparison to other cities hosting this process. In Seattle, $30 million for participatory budgeting, $10 million in Nashville. And we saw in Paris, they have 5% overall of their operating budget for participatory budgeting. And so we really believe that Boston can hold the standard and really push the envelope in investing more into this process. And so we at least want to be comparable to the other cities that we're seeing this displayed.
And can you walk us through the history of Better Budget Alliance, and how does participatory budgeting work?
Yes, so participatory budgeting is the act of residents having direct say in decision-making power over a piece of the public budget. Right. So for in this case, it's the city's budget. The foundations of participatory budgeting is actually in Brazil in 1989. And so we want to make sure that we're building over that in the next couple of years. And so why participatory budgeting matters, it's really important for residents to have an understanding of how budgets work. Over 70% of all of the operating budget for the city is from our property taxes. So it is our money. And so we believe that we should be able to have the direct decision-making power over that. The Better Budget Alliance is actually the implementation vehicle for all of our coalition and grassroots partners who worked on the Yes on One campaign in 2021, which was a ballot initiative. It was the people's ballot initiative. Folks showed up to the polls and they decided overwhelmingly, nearly 70%, that this is something that we wanted. And so our role as grassroots organizations in the BBA is to make sure that that dream, that true intention of what PB is implemented with the voters' intentions.
And I remember Senator Lydia Edwards being a fundamental part of making sure that it got to the ballot. Can you talk a little bit about how participatory budgeting can be used as a tool to advance racial and economic justice?
Right. We are using participatory budgeting, and why this is so important to our residents is to make sure that we're reducing and removing the harms of long-term disinvestment in certain communities and representing underrepresented folks, making sure that they have a seat at the table and decision-making power. And so it's really important that we're centering this process in equity. We've been working directly with the Office of Participatory Budgeting. We've been working with Renato there and making sure that our process has equity criteria and deliverables so we can make sure that we're achieving that racial and economic justice. So it's truly about making sure that folks that are the experts in their communities, that are living their daily lives, also have a direct say in how we're shaping what their communities are looking like.
And who are some of the groups involved with Better Budget Alliance?
Yeah, so we have quite a few organizations within the Better Budget Alliance. Actually, in my role as field director and on the steering committee of the Better Budget Alliance is with the Massachusetts Voter Table. And we have, you know, groups that have been working on this since the ballot initiative in 2021. And so it's really important that they're in the process of implementation from the Center of Economic Democracy. I already mentioned the Massachusetts Voter Table, Family Justice as Healing, New England United for Justice. We have many groups that are within this coalition that are working hard and striving to see that economic and racial justice that can come from a participatory budget process.
Boston has a long history of iconic and historic women who have changed not only our city, but the world. On Saturday, June 1st, Women of Color magazine will present Sista to Power, a conference festival honoring 100 women of color in Boston. Organizer and host, Mr. G-Boss, joined us in studio with S.B. John, Urban Heat Media radio host personality, who's being honored this June to discuss the upcoming event and how viewers can get involved. The Sister to Power Conference Festival Boston is coming Saturday, June 1st, to Roxbury Community College.
Yes.
Can you tell us more about the event and what inspired you to create it?
What inspired me, my mom is 98 years old, so I stand on my mom's shoulder, and plus I've never did a women's conference before. I did hair shows, fashion shows, and God given the Sister Power Conference to me. He told me what to write, he told me what the agenda would be and who I should have there. And I believe in God, and I listen to his voice. And last year, June 3rd, was the Sister Power Conference Festival Boston, and it turned out wonderfully. It was great.
Amazing. And what can attendees expect to see at this year's festival?
This year, at the conference festival, we're introducing awards to people, something such as the Women on the Radio Award. We're honoring women in broadcasting and podcasting. And we also do a live hair show. We do hair right before your very eyes. We have several hairstylists and barberstylists that will be there. We have something on health, wellness, and fitness, and women in business, entrepreneurship, and generational wealth building. That's very important for women to build their self-esteem. We have motivational speakers and people coming in. And it's a multicultural event.
Incredible. So it sounds like a lot of goodies in
there. A lot of goodies that we'll be presenting to people, panel discussions, and people that are in promotion and marketing will be there as well.
Great. And SB, you're one of the women who are being honored this year at the 2024 Swag Awards. Can you talk a little bit about how it feels to be honored and why it's important to recognize Black women in the community?
Sure. Well, I'm honored and I'm humbled by Mr. G Boss. Thank you so much for acknowledging me in the field. I am a radio host on Urban Heat Radio, which is based here in Boston. And I think that having a platform for women, our voice, and the advocacy, we as women make history every day, but we don't get acknowledged for it. And I think it's very important to show that we are here, our voice is important, and to allow that our voices are heard and taken just as seriously as our male counterparts in that business particularly.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Mr. G Boss, so you are one of the forces behind the Women of Color magazine.
I am the founder, CEO, publisher. And I just want to say that SB is receiving the Women on the Radio Award. That's the first time ever award given out. There's going to be six women that will be on it. I'm the CEO, publisher, founder of WOC, 100 Phenomenal Women of Color.
Excellent. Can you tell us a little bit more about the women featured in this year's magazine?
It's people from all walks of life, all genres, and every people that are CEOs, directors, people that are cooks, chefs. We have a young lady who's just started her catering service, Said and Done Catering, and she will be there. We honored people like Denise Omard of Cafe Juice Up, and Dr. Gwendolyn Farrell, who's on WEZ Radio. So we feature everyday women in the magazine, and it's not just for Black and brown women. There are three other Caucasian women that are in the magazine. And why was that? Because they had a special interest in what they were doing in the community of Providence and Worcester and Springfield. So I wanted to make sure it's inclusive and that I included them in as well. And they were very excited to be there. So it is WOC, Phenomenal Women of Color magazine, but we also wanted to make sure that we had Native American women in there and people from, and these women from around the world. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the magazine travels as far as Santiago, Chile, Las Vegas, people from, so if you had friends and family in your native country, your homeland, we can feature them as well. So the magazine is not on the newsstands, but it's given out to everyday people. And as this copy right here, this is from the awards show. There were 15 women that received the G-Boss honors. And I've been giving out awards for 55 years.
Wow.
This year, and then this year is my 56-year anniversary show. October 20th, 1968 was my first show at New England Life Hall in Copley Square.
Ooh. All right, so we're talking to a legend then. And I know that we're in the early stages of planning now for the conference. Can you talk about the current needs for this year's conference?
Yeah, the needs are sponsorship because we're not maybe in Essence, you know, a magazine or Essence or BET. We're local. So we're looking for vendors. We're looking for women who own their own business, book authors, singers, songwriters. We do have vendorship information, seniors. And we also have, as you mentioned, the SWAG Awards. This is the second annual. SWAG stands for Success, Wealth, Achieving Greatness. So we try to empower everyday people. There is a young man by the name of Protege. He's a Christian rap artist, first time coming out. He used to do secular music, so now he's transferred over into spirituals and gospel music, and he's one of the award recipients. And again, you know, just to mention, I'm so very honored and very proud of SB John. You know, when she walked into the conference last year, her walk, her aura, and she sat on the panel. And again, she was only on for a few minutes, but again, the Lord said, honor her with an award. And that's what we're doing, giving honor. The Bible says, give honor where honor is due.
If you're interested in being a guest speaker, model, artist, vendor, providing entertainment, or you would like to nominate a woman for recognition, Mr. G Boss at mrgbos@aol.com. Thanks for tuning in, Boston. As a reminder, you can stream or watch the news on demand at bnnmedia.org. Each episode will be rebroadcast at 9:30 p.m. and 11 p.m. on Xfinity Channel 9, Astound Channel 15, and Fios Channel 2161. And make sure to check out our BNN HD Xfinity Channel 1072. You can also listen to us on the radio Fridays at 7:30 and 9 p.m. and Monday through Thursday at 9 p.m. And now you can watch BNN News on the go with the Cablecast app. For BNN News, I'm Faith Hermaphrodite. I'll see you next week.